We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Adult Improver edition of Perpetual Chess. We've got another great interview with another inspiring adult improver. Shout out to Chess Reddit for the suggestion on this one. This week, we are joined by Kingzilla Online. He's done a lot of tactics on Chess Tempo and written a post there. He's written posts for chess.com about his improvement philosophy, and those will be in the show notes for background. He gained about 170 ELO points a few years back in a story somewhat reminiscent of Andreas Krizdwa, where he just decided to buckle down, put in the work hard on his chess, and then he's blogged about it a little bit and told us some of his secrets of how he did it. And he's joining us from Spain today. Thank you for joining us, Cristóbal.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's just my pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to bounce some ideas off you, and that's Cristóbal Savino, although, again, online, you can find him as Kingzilla on his chess accounts. So, Cristóbal, before we get deep into chess improvement, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background, where you live in Spain, how you got into chess, and all of that good stuff.
Okay, so it's kind of complicated because I'm obviously my nationality is Spaniard, but actually I lived 20 years in Luxembourg. So actually I grew up in Luxembourg. So I just lived in Madrid for the last 5-6 years, but basically 4 years in Pamplona where I studied, and 5 years in Madrid, and 20 years in Luxembourg. So it's a bit like that.
And you're in Madrid now?
Yes, I live in Madrid now for the last 5-6 years.
Okay. How did you get into chess?
Okay, so basically my grandfather was a national master, and he was a very good player. And we were we would go to his to our grandparents' home back in Madrid in the summer, and we would he would teach us the moves, how to play, how to solve problems, and that's how I learned chess at the age of 6, 8 years old. But how I got into chess was more or less like a process, because I really started getting interested in chess when I was about 13. So 12, 13, obviously I took some courses in school, some extracurricular courses, which was chess. And I started playing with friends, started playing in school, and I started to get motivated, right? I started to learn a little bit about some chess positions and how to analyze a game. And my father told me, okay, what do you want to do? You want to play football? You want to say, no, Dad, I would like to play chess. So please, I would like to go to a chess club. And this was in Luxembourg. I was around 12 years old.
So was that your first tournament at the age of 12, or had you played tournaments before then?
No, I didn't play. My first tournament was at 13.
Okay.
So when I was 12, I was still... my father took me to the club, to the chess club in Luxembourg, which was Vonnegut Chess Club, Gambit. And it was a very interesting moment for me, because it was the first time I got into a club, meet other kids, and met all the chess environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the first time you go to a chess club, it's like it gets stuck in your memory, right? It's like a moment of where you discover like a new...
Yeah, it's a new obsession. I mean, it's a
new
it's like a new love, you know. You meet a girl or guy whoever's, you know, depending on your inclination, and it just sweeps you up.
Yeah, it really hoops you up, and it's amazing, because you know, the feeling of going to the club and meeting all the people there, seeing all these old guys or playing, you know, in the chessboard, big chessboard, and it just really gets you into it.
Yeah, and it's like a hidden world. I mean, you might have had some exposure to it from your grandfather, but for me and for a lot of people, it's like you open this, you know, it's like a hidden room in a house or something. You don't know it's there, and then you find your people.
You open the Pandora box, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the first moment where you realize that there's a new world, there's a different world that you discover, right?
Yeah.
And for me, it was going to a chess club was really the first moment where I took chess seriously, right? I was 12 years old. And I basically was Saturdays, I think, training. So I went, my father took me there every Saturday, and we trained for, I think it was about 3 hours training with all the local kids. And it was a very, I mean, I have good memories about it, because it was a very... a nice experience. I met a lot of talented kids who later took chess seriously or not. But my experience is that when I started playing chess at the local club, the kids I mean, it was, okay, so I come here to this room, right? There are plenty of kids with many chess boards around. And so the trainer comes and asks me, okay, let's play a little game. So I sit up right next to another children, and I start playing. And we start to play Ariel Lopez. And funny enough, the trainer was pretty surprised because I actually knew some stuff. And this is due to the fact that I learned some basic opening knowledge due to some chess software, which was Chessmaster 8000 or something like that at the moment. So basically I could make some moves about the Ruy Lopez, and the trainer was pretty surprised that I was making all the theoretical lines. But it was really a moment where I realized that I could play chess. I mean,
okay, and then looking at your FIDE page, it looks like you were born in 1987. No one with a FIDE rating can hide their age, so I was able to look that up and was just trying to put the pieces together. So this would have been around 1999 or 2000. So you were kind of right before the computer explosion in chess, right? So as you mentioned, there were chess programs, but it wasn't like it is now with tactic trainers and YouTube videos.
No, of course not. You know, I think it was my birthday, and I asked my father. Okay, he asked me, "What would you like for your birthday? Do you want a computer game?" Or I said, "No, please, Dad. I want a chess book. I want to go to a library, and I want a chess book." So that's what we did. We went to a library, and I chose a chess book from a master, Italian master, and.
Do you remember which book it was?
Yeah, it's not a very known book.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very marginal book, but it was very good. I mean, it was obviously it was some master games analyzed with a rating point system where you could see how good you were doing and stuff like that. And yes, so it was interesting because it wasn't the moment of back in the 2000, it wasn't really the era of computer age, right? There were some computers, but there were no tactical trainers, there were no all this software that is around today. So, but there was a Chessmaster 8000, which was the first program I used to learn chess, which of course it was very simple, but it was really the first program I used to get into more knowledgeable about chess.
Yeah, and just to have something to practice against all the time. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I could play against the computer. It was really, it was an interesting experience, right? I mean, I could practice, I could play, could set up the level which I wanted to play against the beginner or more advanced, get crushed against the computer.
Right. I've been there. I guess we all have.
Yeah.
So you played chess, so starting with enthusiasm in your early teens, and now you are maybe 30, 31. So have you played throughout your life, or did you have some time away for university or anything like that? Like, or have you just been consistently playing ever since?
Actually, it was interesting because I play obviously, I got into the chess club at 12, and I started playing competitive chess at 13. So I was rated about 1600, and I've played maybe 10 games per year during the 13 to 17, and which isn't a lot, but 10 games per year. And basically afterwards, I went to the university. I went to Pamplona in Spain. And so I kind of quit competitive chess. So from the period 18 to 24, I didn't play any single rated game. And of course, I wanted to play, but I just played local Blitz tournament. And I didn't play any on the board tournament. It's just it's a pity, but I didn't have time. I just was too focused on my studies, right? I'm an economist, by the way.
Okay.
So and it was also a bit complicated because the chess clubs were a bit far away where I lived in Pamplona when I was a young student. I mean, it just turned out that I was too lazy to get a bus or whatever and to travel to the chess club. But it wasn't so easy. And from the 18 to 22, 18 to 23, I didn't play in a single rated game. So it was when I finished my studies in Pamplona, it was around 23, I went to Luxembourg, so back to Luxembourg, to study a master degree, also in economics and finance. And that's where I got back to chess, because I have free time, I have my car, I can travel. So I started taking competitive chess again. And but it was interesting because I had the rating which I had when I was 17, so I was rated 1790. So this shows that from the age 13 to 17, I just gained Elo points, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Playing little chess, of course. But so when I got back, when I was 24, I was doing my master. I got back to competitive chess, and I was rated 1790. And in 1 year, I think I got my rating from 1800 to 1900, or something like that. And that's what I wrote about on Chess Tempo, that I was really struggling against players of my era, right? Because I was always a really... Because during this time when I was in college, I played a lot of Blitz online, right? So I could beat really strong people, really strong grandmasters, IMs and stuff like that on Blitz, but I couldn't really, this didn't never translate it to my OTB experience, right? I couldn't manage to beat regularly the 1800, 1900s, or even 2000 or more. I mean, I was really struggling to beat these guys. And it was around this age, 24, 25, which I realized that I should refocus the way I study. So, I mean, I played the league when I was 24. Luxembourgish league, and I played the national championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I did quite okay. I mean, I played in the big group of the national championship, and I think I got third or fourth, being a 1900, right?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, the big group was for under 2000. So I got fourth. And, yeah, I mean, always, for the amount of games I played, my rating always went up, right? Just from this period when I was 24, I was playing against 1800s, 1900s. I really struggled a lot to make improvements, right? I was making many draws, not winning a lot. But so I went to work to Chile. I was about 25. And when I get back to Madrid, I was 26. That's where I really start working hard on my game. I mean, previously, so that's pretty late in, right?
Take
seriously chess at 26. And I was just a 1900. And basically, that's where I realized that if I wanted to improve, if I wanted to become a 2000, 2100, I would need to reassess my game, right? To realize what I was doing wrong and to kind of get the right studying approach, right? Because I never really studied. I mean, I played a lot of online blitz, but I never really put a studying technique, the right studying technique to improve.
So what did you decide you needed to work on?
Okay, so that's where I wrote on Chess Tempo that I realized that my calculation abilities weren't so good. I mean, my blitz abilities were good because that's what you need to do, right? You need to play fast. You need to make good decisions by intuition, but not very deep, thought process. And what I did was I started a training on Chess Tempo and chess.com. So my approach back then was to work minimum 30 minutes a day. Minimum, that was the minimum. 30 minutes a day of tactics. And but actually I did much more. I did like one hour and 30 minutes every day of tactics.
Yeah, so in your post you say 30 minutes a day minimum is enough, but you when you had time you would do more.
Yeah, exactly. I would do 1 hour 30, yeah.
And you had some other good insights, like you said it was useless to guess a move by intuition, and I've certainly been there, especially because sometimes, since I have young kids these days, if I've got a tactics trainer up, I might be distracted, and it's very tempting to just see the move that you think is probably right and just guess it, but that kind of defeats the purpose.
Of course, that's when I realized that. When I started my training at Chess Tempo, I was rated 1850, something like that. And by realizing that I wasn't thinking deep enough, I started to take the right approach. And I stopped making these impulsive decisions about guessing the right moves. And my approach became more about really getting all the variants sorted out and finding the right solution. So with this approach, my main approach was to take all the time I needed, right? If I didn't see the solution right away, it didn't matter. I would stay right in front of the problem for as long as it took. And it really took me even up to, my record was 1 hour 30 in a single problem. So
wow,
yeah, and it was really, it's like grinding, right? It's like devoting your time to perfecting your calculation abilities, right? And so that's what I did. I said, okay, I have free time. I will, instead of just going problem after problem and just guessing the moves, I will just devote the time I need to get the solution right. And that was my approach, and with good results, because I improved my rating from 1850 to 2000 in about a year, in chess tempo, I mean.
And Chris, after you started really developing a routine and working hard on your calculation, how soon, so you say in a year you went up 150 points, but did you feel sharper like in a week, or did it take a couple months? And in terms of your tournaments, when you got a chance to compete, did you see the results right away, or was there a bit of a lag for what you were learning to sort of assimilate?
No, the results weren't immediate, of course not. I mean, it was a long process. I mean, I improved my rating, my tactical rating, from 1850 to 2000 in about a year, and it was, you know, 1 hour minimum tactical training every day, and I would guess my ratings. In about six months, I would say 6 months. I did see the results. 6 months.
Okay.
And in about a year, I got my rating from 1900 to 2000, more or less 2000. Yeah.
Okay. And so we've had the other guests that we've talked improvement with. Some feel that you need to practice with an actual chess set, and some feel that it's fine to do stuff on screens. In your post, it looked like most of the stuff you do on is on computers. Do you ever, for your studies, get out a chess set?
I know people that prefer chess sets, but I prefer computers.
Okay.
I think I'm more of a computer guy, really. I mean, even the books that I read on chess books, I was on PDF, and I use a mini chess board right in the screen of the mobile phone to make the moves. So I make everything on the computer right now.
Okay. Yeah. That just goes to show that more than one way to skin a cat. So it can be done different ways. And Chris, if you don't mind, I'd like to, so this is becoming a tradition here when we talk adult improvement chess, I'm just going to ask you about some different aspects of ways to spend one's chess time, and you tell me how helpful you think they are to one's chess. So the first one I'd like to ask you about is online blitz. Do you think that helps you become a better player?
I think it all depends on your attitude, right? If you just play blitz and never analyze afterwards, I think it's just wasting time. But if you play, for example, minimum, I would say, I mean, even a 5 minute game, I mean, less than five minutes is, I think, is just too quick. So I think the minimum is 5 minutes, but I would recommend longer time control, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes with increment. And to be useful for any training purpose. I mean, even a 5 minute game can be useful. I mean, 5 minutes is the minimum time control to get something out of the game, to learn maybe. So I would recommend to play minimum 5 minutes with increment. Ideally it would be like 15 minutes with 10 seconds increment. And I always recommend to after you finish the game, obviously, first of all, when you play the opening, you should try your best to make the best moves and everything. And afterwards, when you analyze the game, you should research the openings. You should analyze with an engine. Obviously, you should analyze on your own first of all, and then make annotations about the game. You should. Should get organized, right? You should get a chess database, and even a 15-minute game where you play it, if it's any interest, you should you should analyze it deeply, and try to learn something from each game, right?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, and that echoes what other guests have said. If you're just doing a binge where you play for hours and never look at the game, it's not going to help you much.
Actually, my approach was always, even if I play a 55-minute game, I would always analyze the game with a database, research the opening. I would analyze with an engine. I would analyze on my own. I would try my best to learn something from each game. I think that's the approach. If you just play for hours and never analyze a game, I think it's just wasting time, right? You will get better at Blitz, but you will not improve at your chess knowledge or get anything from the game you play, right?
Yeah.
I think you need to analyze maybe not every game, but the most interesting ones, right? I think there's a lot to learn from each game, even if it's Blitz. So that's what I think. Even you can learn from Blitz, yeah. But I would recommend rapid time controls.
Okay, yeah, and you mentioned you do a lot of training games in rapid time controls, or at least you did when you were making this push.
Yeah, when I was making, when I had this big improvement from when I was 26, right? I started my serious training. I would do 1 hour 30 of tactical training. Then I would play two rapid games, minimum 15 minutes, 10 increment, and I would do my best, and then I would analyze it very seriously. So this would all take another hour and a half, right?
So we're talking, all in all, you're spending maybe 3 hours a day on chess at this point?
Yeah, that was the minimum, yeah.
Wow, that's a lot. That's commendable and enviable at the same time, because I know that for some of our listeners, that's just not practical, you know, but obviously it's the more you put in, the more you can take out. Okay, so let's get on to some other possible ways to spend chess time. Do you follow Elite Chess? Do you watch tournaments online when they're happening?
Yes, I used to watch all the main competitions online. Obviously, the World Championships, obviously, all the main events, so the Big NC, all those. Every main event I would follow. And I would just see the commentators analyze the positions, and I would... Yeah, of course, I had a lot of free time at one point, and I would follow the games live. But of course, maybe it's not practical for everyone. Not everyone has time to follow the events.
Yeah, but do you think that helps your chess, or is it more just like for fun?
I think in part it's for fun, obviously, but I think you can learn. Every chess source is good to learn something new, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's not the best way to really learn yourself, because you're watching elite games where maybe you will not understand all the ideas, all the opening moves, and so maybe it's just more for fun. But I think if you have a good commentator like Peter Zwidler or something like that, it can be, it's always useful. The more chess you intake is the best, the more chances you will have to improve, right? I wouldn't recommend it to just improve, watch tournaments, but it could be another source of improvement, right?
Yeah. Okay, and this one you wrote a lot about in one of your posts, but might as well let you speak about it from the heart. What do you think about studying openings? How important is it for improvement?
Yeah, I think openings are... What I wrote in chess.com article was that you shouldn't focus too much on openings until you were more advanced player, right? Because that's where opening theory becomes more important, right? Starting from 2100 or more. But I believe for the casual player, for the club player, openings do not matter as much as people would think. But obviously, it's important to have good setups. I mean, to learn to have your to at least know what the first 7 moves of the game are, right? I mean, if you don't know that, you're pretty lost. So you need to know the setups, how to maneuver in specific positions. But really, it comes with practicing, right? Obviously, the more you compete, the more need of opening knowledge it will come naturally. If you compete more, you will need more opening knowledge. It's just a natural thing.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So I believe opening is not. Is I mean, I think because you see all the time will amateurs, right, 1600 will buy many chess books. They will have all their shelves complete with many opening books, and I think you will learn more by studying middle game strategy, end game, and tactical problems, right? I think if you put all your attention into openings, I think you might be burning time. You might be not using wisely your resources, right?
Yeah.
Your time.
Yeah, so, the advice I generally give is if you take a handful of your games, like if you look at like your last 15 tournament games, or anyone looks at their last 15 tournament games or something like that, and you try to isolate the single reason why whatever result you got was attained, I would say that below the 2000 level, in my experience, it's very rarely going to be because of the opening that the result that you got was attained, especially if you lose. If you study the openings really well and you out-prepare your opponent, you can sometimes catch them in traps and get some easy wins that way. But in terms of losses, I've found that it's very rarely because of the opening. It's usually because of an endgame mistake or a miscalculation mistake or some combination of the two. And until you see the openings really starting to impact your results, that's when it'll be a cue that it's time to really ramp up the opening study, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you. Totally agree. I mean, I think and the lower rater level, most mistakes come from tactical mistakes, right? That's clear. So maybe losing a piece or miscalculating a variation or
missing a move, yeah.
Yeah, missing a move, or right? Losing a pawn, or I mean, it's just opening doesn't play such a big role there, right? I agree with you. I mean, for the lower raters, I will recommend more tactical training. I mean, that's really more important to get better at tactical.
Okay.
Tactical vision than just focusing on openings. I mean, I really think openings preparation really matter when you get really good.
That's, yeah. Yeah. And the obviously the better you get, the more important they become. But the converse of that is also true. The lower rated you are, the less important. All right, and you also in one of your posts talked about the importance of studying endgames.
Yes. Because I realized that I didn't play the endings so well. I mean, I think my overall game was okay, but I think my endings sometimes were a bit weak. So I focused a lot of studying time into endings. So one of my Well, I use many books. One I found really interesting was Shershevsky Endgame Strategy book.
Yeah, that's a great book.
Yeah, I recommend it highly. And also, I just play some games and analyze the endgame, all right? So I think you can learn a lot from your games, right? So every time you have an interesting endgame, you should analyze it deeply and trying to get some conclusion about it, like I could have activated my king sooner or whatever. So trying to get some conclusion from the most interesting endgames that you play. And that's what I would say.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the post that it's not per se like know the Lucina position, know the Philidor position, although those are obviously such classics that you probably should know those. But it's not so much that you need to know, like you. I think you mentioned you don't need to memorize Dvoretsky's Endgame Manual. It's more about understanding the approach. And the book you mentioned, Shereshevsky's Endgame Strategy, I think is particularly good on that. I mean, it just shows like, This is how you treat this position. You know, this is how you treat a good bishop versus a bishop versus a knight in an endgame, and so on and so forth. So it's not so much that you're going to memorize specific positions, but just you're going to see ideas in action, and hopefully it will seep into your subconscious. And a book that Mike Klein recommended when I had him on, and that I'm also a fan of, Capablanca's Best Endings, is also a good one for that, where you just see a plan in action. It's not necessarily memorization.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think many people are mistaken when they think, oh, I'm going to study endings and I'll just take the latest Dvoretsky manual and I will just go from theoretical position, I will study all in detail. I mean, I think it's just a waste of time. I think you should get more, you should know like the main theoretical, like you say, the Lucena, other stuff like that, right? But to get more, to learn more about endings, you should really try to develop like strategic thinking, right? And yeah. I think really good book for that is Shershevsky's book. Also, there's some interesting books out there. I mean, I think Igor Smirnov is quite interesting.
What's it called?
Igor Smirnov is the author. Igor Smirnov.
Okay.
It could be recommended to club players. I mean, I learned from his ending books. I learned quite a lot. And I think you shouldn't focus too much on the on very theoretical positions. You should focus more on how to make practical decisions in your games. And that's you develop that by analyzing maybe your own games. So it's not such a complicated thing to attain.
Yeah, and speaking of analyzing your own games, we have a question from a supporter of the podcast. Chad Oliver asks, please describe your process for analyzing your games and your ability to recall your thought process from the game during your analysis. And Chad would like for you to answer that and for me as well. So who do you want to go first, Chris?
The first question.
Yeah. Do you want me to take it first or do you want to go first?
You can go first.
Okay. So for me, Chad, and it is a good question, specifically the part about how well you recall your thought process, because what I've found, especially as I move inexorably towards middle age, is that I don't remember my thought process as well as I used to. And for me, that means that it's increasingly important for me to analyze the game soon after it's over. If I analyze it within a day, I found I'm pretty well able to write down what I thought. You know, if you think about behavioral economics, I know you mentioned that you're an economist. You know, people like Daniel Kahneman have written about the importance of decision journals, basically where if you're trying to improve your thought process on something, one of the best ways to do it is to journal what you're thinking in real time, which obviously you can't do in a chess tournament, but you want to try to replicate that as best you can in a tournament. So that means, you know, obviously, especially with the American style of chess tournament where you're playing two or sometimes even more games per day, you can't just write, you can't take the time, you need to rest in between rounds. So you can't write everything immediately. But as soon as you get a chance, try to write down everything you thought. And it's almost more important to get it down than to do the analysis, because it's from dissecting the thought process later that you can make progress. And I know I've had the experience as a busy working parent where I'll play a tournament, and playing a tournament for me, it requires a lot of moving parts. I have to make sure my wife can watch the kids. It's not so easy for me to not have anything to do for a couple days. So the mere feat of getting to the tournament is hard. So then for me to have the time to analyze the games the way they should be is tricky, but I can definitely tell you that the times that I've let it go and then I try to look at the game 3 weeks later without having taken a look, there's significant diminishing returns in the analysis, because I'll look at moves and I just don't exactly know why I played them. I mean, obviously you can kind of piece it together, and my moves aren't so bad that I can't understand them at all, but sometimes I'll, you know, there'll be a better move and I won't remember why didn't I play that better move? Did I look at it or did I just miss it entirely? Was there, you know, a behavioral reason that I missed something? It's very important to focus on behavioral ticks, biases, where you might just want to avoid complications or something. And if you notice that trend in your games, that's something that you need to address. So that's kind of a wandering answer, but basically I would say it is important when you analyze it. And of course, we've had many guests, Chad, talk about how important it is to analyze without an engine. I think that's important as well. I'm not, as I've mentioned before, I'm not a total stickler. If there's a really complicated tactical position and you just have to see what it was, like you just want to see what the win was, I understand the human impulse to do that, and it's okay to turn the engine on, in my opinion, and just check it out, but you really want to try to replicate the tournament conditions when you're analyzing as soon as possible after the tournament. And that's my answer.
Yes, from my part, I would say that I agree with you that the sooner you analyze the game after you played it, the better, because if you analyze it, like say one day afterwards, you will not get the freshness, you will not get the same, you will lose a lot of your, what was going on through your mind, right? And so I recommend really that right afterwards, when you play a game, when you arrive home, you should analyze it right away. Like maybe just the sooner the better, right? And I think I know some people who write down their thought process in books and make annotations, but I just like to analyze my games with, of course I analyze it on my own and try to get conclusions and ideas of what I played, why I played this or that. But when I've been analyzing for like say 20 minutes, I say, okay, now it's time to get the engine in. Mm-hmm. And I think the engine is very useful. I mean, don't get me wrong, because you cannot analyze it only by yourself. You need an engine to tell you what you did wrong. Or the thing is, you need to use the engine wisely. I mean, you need to the engine will tell you what the best move is, but it will not tell you why. So you need to be careful there when you analyze, and maybe play against the computer to see why a move is good or bad. So I think, but answering to the question is just that the sooner the better. I think you should always analyze the position as fresh as you can, and that's a really important thing. If you can make annotations on your own, of course, if you can get a stronger player to do the annotations, perfect. But if you can write down what you thought about a specific move or a specific moment, and this is very useful. And maybe review these games after a while, so you can get an idea of how you play back then. And yeah, so that would be my recommendation, to always analyze the game as soon as you can, and take it very seriously, right?
So yeah.
That's what I would say.
And have you ever, probably not as a kid, or at least not extensively, have you hired a trainer at all as an adult? Have you ever had stronger players that regularly analyzed your games?
Yes, I had a few trainers, yes. When I was 26, right when I started my serious training, I got a few trainers. I had Dusan Popovic, who is from a grandmaster from Serbia. I had Christoph Selecki, Chess Explained.
Yeah, I know you mentioned, I'm a big fan of his, and I know you mentioned as well in your in one of your posts that you found his videos in particular to be quite educational.
Yeah, exactly. And also had Zoltán Medvegyi, who's a strong grandmaster from Hungary. And I think my latest trainer is a Madrid champion, Javier Moreno, who's a very strong player. And but basically, what I do with my trainers is just going through my games, right? I don't have time to go through some standard lessons, right? What I focus in is just, okay, I played this game, let's analyze it and tell me what I did wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I had quite a few trainers, and I think it was quite a positive experience. I mean, I think I learned a lot.
Yeah, definitely. If you can afford to get a trainer, it can definitely speed up the learning process. Okay, just a couple more questions, Chris, regarding different facets of the game to work on. And then I want to get some book recommendations, and then I'll let you go if that timeline works for you.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so how important do you think it is to study Grandmaster games?
I think it's important because Grandmaster will play many subtle moves, and you will learn more from a Grandmaster game than, say, if you analyze like a 1800 game, right?
Right.
So I think Grandmaster analysis games is quite interesting. Also, the thing is, if you're an aspiring player, you want to learn, analyzing Grandmaster games is good to see how beautiful moves are made. But the thing is, maybe it's it will be too complicated to understand fully, even with annotations. So I think I mean it's always good to analyze Grandmaster games, but the thing is it could be a bit, let's say,
I think I can sum up what you're getting at. I think if, or at least I can try, because I agree with the strain of thought, which is basically you can learn from studying Grandmaster games. It certainly can't hurt. But in terms of optimizing your time, I suspect that working on your own calculation would be a bigger boost to your performance.
Exactly, because Grandmaster games are just, the main truth is it's too complicated, right?
Yeah.
So learning a lot from Grandmaster games is just like... It's like a matter of luck, really, to learn specifically from Grandmaster games. So I think you should learn more from your own games, right?
Yeah. And, of course, there's more to chess than chess improvement in terms of appreciating the beauty of chess and the history of chess and understanding the different styles of past champions. That's something that studying the greats contributes to greatly and has great value. But if you've got an hour a day to devote to chess and your number one goal is chess improvement, then I wouldn't say you should never look at games, but it shouldn't be your number one priority.
Exactly. I mean, I think looking at the world champions games is just more of a matter of getting just into... for pure entertainment, right? I wouldn't think it's really good to improve, right? To look at the really strong players, because
yeah, especially in my opinion, the modern games are just so complicated. When if you go back to the Capablanca era when he had such a big edge on his opponents, I think that those games are a little bit easier to follow. But still, I think working on your own game is probably better. I mean, ideally, you'd be doing everything, but unfortunately, life doesn't work that way for us adult improvers. So, Chris, what's your opinion about exercise as it relates to chess improvement? Do you think it matters?
You mean physical exercise?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I think being fit helps. I mean, just being healthy and eating well, of course it helps, and probably not smoking.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, you should stay fit and you should exercise. I mean, it won't hurt the game, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Basically goes without saying. Okay, and I'd like to get a few more recommendations from you. So you mentioned the Igor Smirnov book. Do you happen to remember the title on that one? Or
He has many books, so he has a really big collection.
Okay.
But the one I read was about the endings, so I don't think he has many endings books.
Okay, and of course, Shereshevsky. And do you have any other favorite resources? Or
Yes, I mean, a really good source is Chess OK, which is Russian software.
Hmm.
Which the software is called Peshka, and it's really good. I mean, of course, you have to pay, but they have really tons of exercises of middle game strategy, endings, tactical exercises, and I think it's very useful. This is mainly prepared for club players, not for IMs or grandmaster. So that's a really good resource. I would recommend highly. And yes.
Okay, and you mentioned in one of your posts, You worked a lot with Chess Mentor on chess.com, which I guess they now call lessons. Like if you click on the tab where it says lessons and you can go through, you know, playing a bishop versus a knight in an endgame and, converting material advantages and rook versus bishop and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Any other favorite books?
Just for pure pleasure, I would recommend the Kasparov series on the World Championship. But it's just for pure entertainment. I mean, for improvement, I mean, I think American author Jeremy Silman is quite decent.
Yeah, he's great.
And there are a few books. I mean, I can just pick up in my mind right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've got plenty of resources. So one question from Peter Newhall, another supporter of the podcast, who says, Peter says, I think I'm most interested to hear what changed in your approach when you made a lot of improvement from 2013 to 2015 versus the last couple of years where it seems like your rating has flatlined. This is very common, but it also suggests that perhaps your advice is specific to A players trying to make it to expert level.
Yes. I mean, my advice what I give in the chess tempo, I think it's more towards, A players, because I think the lower rated should focus more on getting pattern recognition, because we all start with that, right? Pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have enough pattern recognition, high rate problems will be much difficult. So it's important to have a wide variety of pattern recognition in your mind so you can solve high rated problems. And my approach, what I give is what I say, that you should take as long as you can for each problem. I think it works better with higher rated opponents, higher rated players. I mean, mainly towards 1800 or more FIDE. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what's going on with your chess now, Chris? Are you still pushing to improve, or are you kind of taking a break?
Right now, I'm kind of taking a break. I mean, I've kind of plateaued myself in my rating. I've been around 2100 for the last 5 years. So last 4 or 5 years, and it's really difficult to improve. I mean, I think I reached my maximum, really.
Wow, that's most people won't admit to that. I think that you do reach a point where the diminishing returns are real, and I wouldn't say that means that one cannot improve, but it certainly gets more challenging. So you mentioned you were studying for 3 hours a day when you made this big push, and we've talked a lot about what it is that you did. Now, as you've sort of plateaued around 2100, have you continued? I mean, you said you're not doing it now, but was there a period where you continued that regimen of putting in a lot of time and just the results weren't there anymore?
Exactly, yeah. For a couple of years, I tried really hard to improve to 2200, but the results weren't there, really. I mean, I realized that to get better, I would have to be much more knowledgeable about opening theory. I would have to play endings much better. The input of hours I would need to study, it would be so great that it wouldn't compensate the extra 100 points that I would get.
Yeah,
that's where I realize in my mind it's just so hard to improve when you reach really a certain level. So
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be so sure that you can't do it, but I get that.
I mean,
energy for this, it ebbs and flows.
I mean, in my case, when 2100 is already quite decent, right? But for me, at least, for me, it's a milestone. So getting to 2200, I would need to be a lot more consistent, and I see it's so complicated to, I mean, I would have to study a lot.
I mean, as a working adult, 3 hours a day that's borderline unsustainable, I would say.
Yeah, even 5 hours a week, I think I might not be enough to get to 2200. I mean, In my case, it might be because I retook chess quite late, right? I was 25, 26 when I started studying seriously. So if I started studying seriously chess when I was 18, maybe the result would be different. Maybe I would be a FIDE master right now, but at least I got some college education, right?
Yeah.
you cannot have everything, right?
Yeah, it's true. No, I know. I can relate for sure. I mean, my goals are, I'd like to make another push in chess, but for me, it's like my rating fell off. I peaked at age 18, and my rating fell off enough where I just want to get to close to, I want to get to in the neighborhood of how good I was at my best. Get like attaining new highs doesn't seem doable right now for me. But I mean, I think with 5 hours a week, one can make improvement. But
yeah, sure. That's, I'm not saying I'm saying for myself that even if I put 5 hours, I mean, I think I reached my maximum. So even if I study a lot, I will make little improvements, but I will not improve a lot. So, but I think for people that are lower rated, like 1600, 1800, whatever feeder rating they have, there's a ton of improvement to make. I mean, there's a ton of improvement. So 1 hour a day is really good time to improve. To 1 hour a day, let's say 5 hours a week, is good enough to make improvements. I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, and again, just to hammer this point home, I think especially in terms of working on calculation, because I'm a similar level to you, 2170 FIDE, and as I start to contemplate like plugging the holes in my game, it sort of feels like whack-a-mole, because it's like I basically need to get better at everything, right? Whereas when you're coming from a lower level, of course you do need to get better at everything, but so much of one's results is determined by tactics.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, tactical improvement will be really good for lower rated. And the thing is, for higher rated, it's just so much needs to improve. So, I mean, but in a more subtle way, right? Because maybe you need to improve your opening theory. Maybe you need to improve your ending technique. So it's more subtle and this requires a lot of work. And for myself, I don't think I can really really improve a lot. It would take a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, from my perspective and for my listeners, I think we would hope that you don't give up. It's like I said, totally understandable to take breaks and recharge, but I don't know. I don't think, we talk sometimes with various guests about the nature of talent in chess. And I think if you can make it to 2100, you can make it farther, but it does, definitely not meaning to imply that it's easy. it does get harder and harder the higher you go.
Exactly. I mean, it gets really tough to improve every single rating point. But the good news for the lower rated is that there's a lot of room for improvement for the 1600, 1800, 1900. So it's just that it's for high rated. It's just you need to study so much that it basically becomes a second life.
yeah, exactly. Okay, well, Chris, thanks for all of the inspiration and ideas of how to improve one's chess. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we get out of here?
Well, just I would like to say that being able to improve doesn't make people lose interest in their own improvement. I mean, there's a ton of ways to improve. There's a ton of way to there's a lot of room for improvement for many people. Just that in my case, it's just I'm taking a break because it's just really hard to improve.
No, and it's frustrating. I mean, we shouldn't gloss over the the emotions behind it. If you're putting a lot into something and you're not getting a tangible return on the investment of your time and resources, that it can be hard to keep pushing. And sometimes you need a break in order to just sort of gather your energy again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or not. I mean, it's, you know, chess is a beautiful game and one can just enjoy it as a fan and play for fun and, you know, even compete, but not necessarily with the idea that, like, I must get better.
Yes. I mean, if for myself, I'm reaching this point where I reach my maximum. I just want to enjoy my hobby, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I mean, I put a lot of hours to improve from 1900 to 2100. I think it's good enough improvement. Just that I don't think I can make it if without a lot of studying to improve to 2200. So, yeah, that's
cool. Well, I appreciate the perspective and the candor. I mean, it's good that we don't, you know, we shouldn't make this sound easy. And so, Chris, if anyone wants to reach you, I suppose they can find you on chess.com or Chess Tempo. Is there another way that people could reach you?
Mainly chess.com and Chess Tempo is good enough.
Okay, so I'll link to those, and that is how I track Chris down. So,
okay,
yeah, and I really appreciate again you taking the time. This was fun and insightful.
Okay, thanks a lot for inviting me.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music, Matthew Passy, my esteemed producer, and everyone who's written a good review on Apple Podcasts or other podcast platforms or told a friend about the show. Every little bit helps. But of course, I'm most indebted to those who donate to support the show. Without you guys, the show would not be possible. And I want to give special thanks to my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual partners. Here are your names. I'm slowly but surely correcting some mispronunciations, so let's see how I do this time. Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Brancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Ali Morchetti, Andres Quizdois, Brian Mullis, Carl LeBons. I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Chabri, Christopher Wood. I am Christoph Zielicki, a.k.a. Chess Explain, Coach J's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel D. Schaefer, Daniel Vine-E, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Agard, James Banastia, Jason Woolham, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Hartman, John Jernigan, Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kostya Kovutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Laura Belyavsky, Leo Delgado, Lorraine Dore, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson of the Full English Breakfast, Matthew Tedesco, Nate Salon, Nathan Webster, Pascal Charbonneau, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Ryan Stone, Steiner Lima, Stuart Katz, WGM Tatiev Abrahamian, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Brennan, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrancouge, Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. Catch you guys soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.